Chris Brame and Ross Kroll with you on this. It's a nice Monday afternoon, but today's supposed to like be the only day it's not going to rain for like a week. So we'll see. Enjoy it while it lasts, as we've got our friend Cuts Benedict now for our Monday visit to talk a little bit of golf, the PGA Tour, and a good weekend at Riviera, an exciting finish. JB, well, exciting aside from the part that JB Holmes is one of those that has been criticized, and rightfully so, for his slow play, but he ends up winning yesterday. And so what does this make him, Cuts? This has always been that tournament that gets connected to the Masters. Success there leads to success at Augusta National. So should JB Holmes be on our Augusta radar in 2 months?
Probably not. You know, and JB's a really good player, and, you know, that's his fifth win, which I don't know if that's Hall of Fame stuff, but that's quite a few wins. It's hard to win on the PGA Tour. So, but he's a really good player. I mean, he's done well in President's Cups and Ryder Cups, and you know, he's solid. But I wouldn't say that it's much of an indicator for him. He's kind of hot or he's not. You know, I don't think it's much of a barometer for his game in April.
Well, the fact that he was obviously figured so prominently on the broadcast yesterday, ended up winning the tournament, brought the whole slow play conversation back to the forefront, because he is he's pretty brutal. And he was, you know, you had Justin Thomas, who ends up shooting 75 yesterday. And I mean, Thomas is one of those guys, when he holds that 54-hole lead, he usually doesn't surrender it. How much of Thomas yesterday in his round was, I mean, that he just has to own that he didn't play well? And how much do you say, like, well, playing with JB Holmes did not help him?
Yeah, I don't know that JB Holmes bothered Justin Thomas much. I mean, I think that, you know, as a player side by side, you know, when somebody's taking a little bit long, as JB Holmes definitely did, on some putts for sure. I mean, he was stalking some putts down the stretch and taking a long time to get him hit. But, you know, I think a player like Justin Thomas gets in a rhythm in the group, and I think they all start playing sort of slow. And, you know, it's the final group, and, you know, so I don't know that bothered him so much. I think for Justin Thomas, I think, you know, the conditions were brutal, and I'm not saying 75 is an acceptable score in the final round for any of these guys, but it was just a nightmare. The wind blew, those greens got sort of dried out, and they're already bumpy because they're whatever the grass is, I'm losing my train. You know, they're like a weed. You know, they're not Bermuda or bent, which we're used to around here. They're a different type of grass. So, you know, I think conditions, and I think, you know, Justin Thomas missed a few putts. He started hitting his driver to the left off of several holes. You know, I think he just kind of didn't get it done on a tough afternoon. And it was a long, long day. And it was, of course, it's a long day for everybody. But, you know, I think a lot of those guys played 25 to 30 holes yesterday. And that's a long day in those tough conditions. And so we'll give Justin Thomas a little bit of a pass on not getting it done.
You know, it's interesting, though, with that Thomas ended up playing with Holmes, because I think it was last year at Torrey Pines when Holmes really got smacked, because he took like 4 minutes to hit a shot into the
yes,
the 18th green on the final day, and Thomas was actually one of the guys that came to his defense and said, like, hey, he needed an eagle to make the playoff, and he ended up spending 4 minutes and decided to lay up, which is kind of anticlimactic and all, but Thomas was one of the guys that actually came to his defense and said, well, I'd have done the same exact thing. So I guess Thomas wouldn't have been in a position to be too critical of him yesterday.
Yeah, probably not. And they're friends. I didn't even think, it didn't occur to me until one of the commentators said this after the tournament was over, you know, but they're both kind of native Kentuckians. So I don't know if they have a little bond there, both being from Kentucky. I know that you know, JB Holmes played it at UK at Kentucky, and of course Justin Thomas played at Alabama. So, but they're, you know, I think they're probably pretty good friends, and I think, I don't know if that, you know, it shouldn't matter, but I think Justin Thomas probably was pretty willing to, you know, not really think about it too much and not really make an issue of it with JB. But you know, the whole tour thing, it does rear the, it's kind of a shame that, you know, a venue like Riviera and a tournament like, you know, the LA Open, the Genesis LA Open, and you know, it's one of the marquee events on tour, and you know, we're spending some time yesterday and today talking about slow play, and you know, it's just, it's kind of too bad. The PGA Tour, I really don't understand where they are as an organization with regard to slow play. What I mean by that, Chris, is I don't know if they truly really care that they have some ongoing slow play issues.
Well, that seems to be the one thing they haven't done anything about. I mean, they've changed,
right,
along with the USGA, they've gotten together and they've rewritten some of the rules, which we've talked about over the last couple of weeks. But the slow play is one that is, you know, they've done zero with. And I just, from your point of view, I understand, like, these guys, you're J.B. Holmes, the tournament's on the line. You want to make sure you've got everything right. You've got the right club. You know which way the wind is blowing. But, in your mind, what is a reasonable amount of time for a professional golfer, even in a high leverage situation, a moment like that, to actually, you know, stand over a shot and hit it?
Yeah, you know, they by rule, you know, the tour policy is these guys, the first guy when they get to the tee or they get to the first, when they get to the green, the first player to hit is supposed to have 1 minute to hit, to pick their club, analyze what they're doing, hit the shot, 1 minute. That rarely probably happens, especially in the last groups, as you're saying, down the stretch on a Sunday. And then the next players to hit are supposed to have 45 seconds. I believe I'm right. If I'm not, I'm real close. And so, you know, I think rarely in the last groups are they abiding by those policies. And so the officials, you know, are the officials going to penalize the last group, you know, that's taking a little bit more time, you know, probably like you're saying, because they're in the last group, they're either tied for the lead or one ahead or whatever. And so, you know, I mean, it's a real dilemma. And I think, you know, I don't know, you hate to say, you know, it's kind of like the refs. So, you know, it's like, hey, you got the last shot to win the game in basketball. Do the refs swallow their whistle or do they call the foul when I don't know. What's the right thing to do? You know, if it's really a flagrant, obvious foul, do they call it, you know, or do they sort of eat the whistle and not? You know, so there's, I think it's not a judgment deal in golf. You're either slow or you're not, but I until the tour penalizes somebody, this is going to continue to happen. And I think overall, you know, slow doesn't always mean better for these guys. You know, I mean, when they play slow and they take a lot of time analyzing a shot, it doesn't always come off well for them. I think sometimes they're better off, you know, thinking about it less and just kind of letting their talent come through and just hit the shot. Get it, you know, just decide what you're going to do pretty quick, pull the trigger and let it go. You know, it's kind of like somebody said in basketball, you know, the shooters are better when they get a pass and put it up when they versus when they have all this time and they can kind of measure the shot, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know. But it is a problem, and of course, because there are so many amateur golfers that are watching and learning from these guys, junior players and club golfers, and it's sort of become accepted, and it's definitely an issue with the game of golf in a very broad scale, never mind the tour.
Because do you think with this getting more attention, like I know you said you believe the rule is a minute once they get on the green, do you think maybe if they extended that a little bit and actually enforced it, do you think that would actually be a way to apply this rule? Because I guess if it's in a minute now, that might not be enough based off what you're saying. If they extended it but then actually enforced it, do you think that would be an answer maybe?
Yeah, you know, I think they could do a study of sorts and look at, you know, I think because there is a difference, you know, between that last group or two that's you know, tied for the lead, one ahead, one behind, whatever it might be on the last few holes versus, I mean, let's be honest, and to your point, Ross, you know, it's like, okay, the guy that is tied for 50th when he's teeing off Sunday and you know, I don't know, I won't say he's not trying. He's certainly trying, but he's not he's not going to analyze near to the depth that the guys that the leaders are. So, you know, there's probably a study to be done and a little bit of analysis. And I think in the end, though, it's going to come back to do they ever penalize somebody? I don't know that they've ever penalized somebody. They might have maybe once or twice in the history of the PGA Tour have they added strokes to somebody's score, and that would be devastating. Can you imagine yesterday if they said, hey, JB, on 17 green, you took a minute and a half to hit that putt, you know, you got a two-stroke penalty. you know, how would that? Can you imagine the ramifications of that?
Yeah, I mean, it would just change the outcome of the whole event all of a sudden.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, and so, you know, they're not, so the tour staff, you know, they're not there. They're really trying. They're there trying not to be a true referee, if you will. They're trying to be there. Most of the tour staff is there to make sure that these guys don't take a wrong drop, or that if they have a problem within the rules per se of where to drop their ball, how to proceed in a situation. That's what the rules staff does with them. You know, they get a drop off a cart path. The rules staff is there to help them with those things. It's really not a, you know, there to be a referee of sorts like they are in other sports. So it's, you know, it certainly makes golf unique.
Cuts, when you mentioned a few minutes ago about talking about slow play and it not always necessarily being a good thing for some of these guys, and maybe they should just get up there and hit it. I have found myself, like, more and more recently watching Spieth play thinking, just hit the ball. There's so much conversation that he's having with his caddy, and I just hit the ball. And for a guy that's won 3/4 of the career Grand Slam, he's put himself in the, you know, in the last couple of tournaments. In the first two rounds, there's nothing wrong with him. But I mean, what is going on with him in Sundays now?
Yeah, he's played terrible on the weekends. You know, I'm not sure his game is altogether there. He's had some decent rounds on Thursday and Friday, and the weekends have been bad. So, I don't know. Spieth, he's an interesting case. I mean, you know, he's so young. You know, he's going to be one of these guys, Chris, that probably has like three resets in his career. You know, it's like he's going to be the comeback player of the year three times or something. I mean, he's just kind of lost it a little bit to me, and I don't know. You know, listening to the commentators on Golf Channel and some other outlets overnight and today, yeah, I'm concerned about him. I mean, none of us are going to worry that he's able to make his house payment. But I mean, when it comes to competing and winning majors and being one of the top players in the world and such, you know, he doesn't look right. He's missing short putts. He's hitting the ball just terrible shots. And, you know, okay, he got married last year and certainly had some time away from game and was focused on some other things. But I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. And I had said going way back, you know, I thought Justin Thomas would have a better career over 25 or 30 years than Jordan Spieth. And I don't necessarily want to be right, but I still think I probably am going to be right. I mean, that's, you know, Spieth is it's very. I don't know what he's doing, if he's going to end up changing coaches or what, but very, very strange what he's up to. And his weekend play's been terrible.
Well, yeah, I mean, it is at the point where it probably the number one thing you would put your finger on with him is it's all in his head now.
Yeah, of course, right? That's what everybody wants to do is say, well, you know, he's a head case. Well, he's probably not a head case. I mean, he's more, you know. But something's going on. I mean, on the greens, he looks very shaky. I don't know if it's – I don't know what it is. I mean, he looks kind of yippy on the greens. I mean, his stroke looks kind of stuttery and shaky to me. And, you know, for a guy that was the best putter on the PGA Tour for, without a doubt, for two or three years running, making everything. And, you know, it's going to be it's going to be highly interesting to see his year unfold for sure. Going into the majors, we've got these four straight majors, so it's like, you know, this April, May, June, July, boom, 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 four in a row, four consecutive months. You know, if you don't have your game from spring to midsummer, you know, the majors are over and your year's kind of done. So, be a lot of eyes on Spieth come Masters time, that's for sure.
You know, another guy with a handful of majors who hasn't won one, though, since 2014 that, you know, everyone picks apart his game and what might be wrong with it is McIlroy. And he's
– sure.
I guess his deal now is he's not going low enough on Sundays for some people, but I'm looking at him a little bit differently right now. He's played three tournaments this year in the States. He's got three top tens. To me,
exactly,
he's a guy that's about to win again, and that's the type of form that would have you thinking, you know, Augusta could finally be his turn there if he keeps this up.
Yeah, he's definitely we'd say momentum is building with him for sure. He's had good finishes. I'm sure he's disappointed that he hasn't won. But, you know, just sheer odds of winning in golf. You know, if you win two or three tournaments in February and March, I don't know if that carries over to April very well. You know, I'd rather save my wins. I'd rather pace myself on the, you know, in the win column. But yeah, Rory, he's played well. You know, he's had some interesting holes throughout the tournaments that you mentioned, the three top 10 finishes. But he's definitely on form, and it very well could be his year. I mean, obviously the Masters is the big deal that completes the career Grand Slam for him, and that is going to be. You know, the media ramp up will be, you know, it'll be the same for until he wins. It's going to continue to be pretty heavy on him. So, and there's no, it's not a foregone conclusion that he will win a Masters. That's a hard thing to win.
Talking with Cuts Benedict. Cuts, we got a couple minutes left. I know you and I were texting before the show about a list of things to maybe go over today. One of them was Phil maybe not playing the Masters, but we could do that next week. You and Jeff did not talk about Kuchar last Monday, so he finally came to his senses and he took the L. I don't know why he dug in his heels so bad, but the thing that was the most telling about that situation was none of his peers were rushing to his defense.
Yeah, no, you're right, and you know, of course, you know, it's easy for us when we're sitting on the sidelines. Okay, the guy just made $1.3 million. You know, $50,000 is like $100, and so it's. Just give that caddy what he's doing now. The question sort of evolved into this guy was a local caddy who lives in the area and carried Kuchar's bag, did the caddy job, done. How much did he pay? Now, they had an agreement of $3,000, I think. Kuchar paid him $5,000 after he won, and $5,000 was still a paltry amount when you've just collected $1.3 million. So, you know, that the media and the social media, you know, all the stuff, you know, kind of everybody ramped up pretty hard on him. And I think rightfully so. I mean, I don't know that, you know, the standard deal is 10%, which is like over $100,000 to the caddy. That's pretty good caddy pay for a win. I mean, it's crazy. But, you know, I'm surprised it took him so long to get where he did. I always felt like, you know what, meet in the middle, you know, 50 grand, that's a lot of money for sure. But these tour players, I mean, I'm not saying all of them, but Matt Kuchar has a lot of money. And $50,000 is a lot of money to anybody, no matter how much you have. But it shouldn't have taken him so long to arrive at that conclusion and get that done. That should have been the easiest thing he'll ever do, and for him to waffle like he did, it's kind of makes you wonder, because I mean, I think Kuchar is well thought of by his peers, I mean, you're right. Nobody really came to his defense, but hopefully we can get that thing behind us too. That's another thing for golf, right? We're talking about what Matt Kuchar paid his caddy for 2 weeks. Let's move on. You know, it's like, hey, we got great tournaments coming up. We got a World Golf Championship in Mexico this week, and then we got a little Florida swing on our way to the Masters and the whole deal. So it's a lot of good stuff coming up.
Well, Cuts, we enjoyed it. We'll look forward to talking next week. And yeah, we do. It is that the thing with Phil maybe not playing the Players Championship is
right,
something,
because right.
I'm sure the Players, which has always been dubbed the unofficial fifth major, doesn't like the sound of, you know, Phil Mickelson saying, yeah, I don't necessarily need to play that tournament. So,
yeah, I mean, that's a pretty big tournament to even talk about skipping. But, you know, the condensed schedule, though, with the Florida deal and the Masters and the whole thing, you know, these guys have to pace themselves, and you wouldn't think the Players would be one of the ones you'd consider skipping. You might skip Bay Hill or Valspar or something before that in Florida. But, hey, if Phil hadn't had great success at the Players, and so maybe it makes more sense for his game that way. Who knows?
All right, Cuts, we'll enjoy it. We'll look forward to next Monday, okay?
Always a pleasure. Y'all have a great week, Chris. See
All
you
right.
guys.
Have a good week. There's Cuts Benedict. Talk a little golf with him as we do each and every Monday. A quick break. We'll come back and go around the SEC. It's the home team on 960 The Ref.